Martin Amis is certainly no stranger to followers of English literature. He's made his mark with such novels as Money, London Fields, Time's Arrow, Yellow Dog. He's back with a new collection of essays entitled The Rub of Time, published by Knopf Canada. In this book, he covers the years 1994 to 2017. He ruminates on such writers as the great Saul Bellow, Nabokov, Iris Murdoch. He tells the all-too-true tale of growing old in your favorite sport. He looks at the porn industry, John Travolta, Christopher Hitchens, and the political upheaval of Donald Trump. And Martin Amis joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Some literary authors are born to the essay genre. I think of people, Gore Vidal immediately comes to mind. Yet some, not yourself, I might add, can't seem to do it. What, in your opinion, makes a great essayist?
Well, Gore Vidal said that when a novelist turns to the essay form, he's sort of writing left-handed. And in his case, it's paradoxical because I'm sure he'll be remembered as an essayist and not as a novelist.
Indeed.
It's another part of the brain. It's more, quite a lot of writing fiction is done by the subconscious. I mean, that's why Norman Mailer called his book on writing novels the spooky art. It is very spooky, and the longer you do it, the stranger it gets, in that you have a difficulty in front of you, and the solution I've learned after 35 years or so is to just walk away and think about something else. You can't do that with essays, and then the subconscious will deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how it works. But with the essay, it's all graft. And any pride I have in this collection and in other collections of essays is just that I managed to do it, which I don't feel at all about fiction. I feel that's a sort of blessing, a gift. But this is just nose to the grindstone. But it's, as a friend of mine said, it's the hardest thing we do. You've got to have ideas, and you've got to know stuff. And it's you get out of bed when you're writing an essay, and you think, here we go again. Whereas with fiction, it's a sort of sick bliss to go into your study. But with it's hard grind with an essay.
Well, you cover a wide range of subjects in this collection and a great deal of time. I had a twofold question for you. What, besides the financial compensation, compels you to take on a nonfiction piece? And more importantly, given the time frame, 1994 to 2017, how on earth do you weed through all that and say, okay, these are my best essays, take them?
Well, it's a solemn undertaking to agree to write an essay, and the longer, the harder. And you do it, you know you're going to have a bad time, but you know you're going to feel proud of yourself at the end of it. It's a very complicated chore. But you do it. A literary editor I used to work for said you've got to keep the lit crit muscles.
I was going to ask, you have to keep exercising the muscles.
So you've got your abs, you've got your lits, you've got your crits. And if you don't use them, it's use them or lose them, that you forget the habit of thinking analytically because it doesn't come up much with fiction.
Right.
So it's a sort of penance that I take on myself.
That's an interesting way to put it. A big feature in this collection is your essays on the Republican Party and the rise of Donald Trump. As a fiction author who certainly capture your time in each one of your novels, how does this, along with other things like Brexit, affect your outlook, affect your work? Because you live in America now with a uniquely English background. Does it change?
Change
the way you perceive things.
Oh, yes, very much. And my opinion of America and Americans has suffered a huge downward revision. I mean, the difference between Brexit and Trump is that no one in Britain knew what Brexit would look like. It was an unknown quantity. But everyone knew what Trump looked like. We'd had nothing else for 18 months. If Britain had been told that Brexit had orange skin and yellow hair and couldn't complete a six-word sentence, I think they would have thought again. But Americans had a very good look at Trump, and instead of wanting less of that, they wanted more. Absolutely unfathomable in a way that Brexit was a shot in the dark, leap in the dark.
Mm.
But Trump wasn't.
Does it make you more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Anti-American.
Cynical? Does it make you more cynical about the world in general?
It's too sort of stupid to be on, put in that ledger, in that column. It's incomprehensible to me in a way that Brexit isn't. And, you know, as I say in one of the essays, journalists are used to dealing with messy stuff, but think what historians are going to have to make of Trump, and what a chapter of shame it is in American history, disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
And the results have been completely catastrophic. Compare the nature of the discourse in America now to what it was 18 months ago, and it's unrecognizable. He's done so much damage. And you just, I want to turn to America and say, you know, what did you expect?
Yeah.
What on earth were you thinking of?
Mm.
In a way that it's opaque to me, in a way that Brexit isn't.
I get, in reading these essays, I get a sense of, and forgive me if I'm wrong, aging. And as a writer who enjoyed a certain amount of enfant terrible celebrity early in his career, how does it feel to be almost one of the elder statesmen now of English letters?
Well, it's terrifying because not for any, you know, status consideration, but just because if you look at literary history, writers tend to go off dramatically when they get to the age I'm getting to next year, 70. And it never came up before. You know, Shakespeare died at 55, Dickens at 56,
mm-hmm.
And all the way down to Keats at 25, Jane Austen, 42. But medical science has given us this, the doddering writer. and it does take, it takes all kinds of forms. Nabokov, it was a sort of moral failing, or moral aesthetic. But the more general path is dilution of what you once had.
But writers such as yourself, and I'm thinking just of New York City alone, you, Peter Carey, Salman Rushdie, you're all still going strong. There's no sense of dilution.
Yeah, and I take heart from my stepmother, Elizabeth Jane Howard, who did all her best work in her 70s and 80s. And I think Penelope Fitzgerald is another example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think women do, as they proved in other spheres, have more resilience than men.
Mm-hmm.
Although I wonder what's happened about that, but a year or two ago I heard that Herman Wouk was writing a novel, and he's 99. There are going to be people who do buck the trend, but it's you can't bank on being an exception.
I certainly hope, and I know you probably can't give me any secrets, but I certainly hope that you have another couple of novels in the fire.
I do, and I'm sure there's certainly going to be one more, and I already know what the next one after that is going to be, roughly. So I'd like to stick around long enough to complete them.
I
would do a Philip Roth and just retire.
Just stop it. Can you? Would that be? Could you do that?
I wonder what he does all day now.
But well, that's what I wonder too.
I read a piece that says he reads. He just reads mostly history, American history, and I can imagine doing that.
Yeah.
I know another writer who quit and he learned French. You know, it's a big world out there.
Yeah.
There are other things apart from the spooky art. But I'm addicted to it, and I fear for myself if I have to.
Well,
this huge case of the sweats I'll get if I quit.
I hope you don't break the addiction. I hope you keep writing and writing and writing. I want to thank you so much for dropping by today.
Thank you very much.
We have been speaking to the legendary Martin Amis. His new collection of essays, The Rub of Time, Bellow, Nabokov, Hitchens, Travolta, Trump, Essays and Reportage 1994 to 2017, is published now by Knopf Canada. Run out to your local bookstore and certainly pick that up.